Good morning, and welcome to Intercorp Financial Services first quarter 2020 conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. It is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Rafael Borja of i-advize Corporate Communications. Sir, please begin.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. On today's call, Intercorp Financial Services will discuss its first quarter 2020 earnings. We are very pleased to have with us Mr. Luis Felipe Castellanos, Chief Executive Officer of Intercorp Financial Services, Mrs. Michela Casassa, Chief Financial Officer of Intercorp Financial Services, Mr. Gonzalo Basadre, Chief Executive Officer of Interseguro, and Mr. Bruno Ferreccio, Chief Executive Officer of Inteligo. They will be discussing the results that were distributed by the company yesterday. There is also a webcast presentation to accompany these results. If you didn't receive a copy of the presentation or the earnings, it is now available on the company's website, ifs.com.pe, to download a copy. Otherwise, for any reason, if you need any assistance today, please call i-advize in New York at 212-406-3693. I would like to remind you that today's call is for investors and analysts only. Therefore, questions from the media will not be taken. Please be advised that forward-looking statements may be made during this conference call. These do not account for future economic circumstances, industry conditions, the company's future performance, or financial results. As such, statements are based on several assumptions and factors that could change, causing actual results to materially differ from the current expectations. For a complete note on forward-looking statements, please refer to the quarterly report issued yesterday. It is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Mr. Luis Felipe Castellanos, Chief Executive Officer of Intercorp Financial Services, for his presentation. Mr. Castellanos, please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Thanks, everyone, and good morning. Welcome to IFS's first quarter 2020 earnings call. To start, I want to thank you for taking the time to participate in our call, and again, wishing that all, your families included, are in good health and safe during these difficult times. In this call, we will have the opportunity to review IFS's first quarter results, as well as to provide an update of the actions taken by IFS to ensure business continuity and to help our clients under the current circumstances. Also, we will touch upon the main measures that the government has taken to face this situation. As mentioned in our COVID update call that took place a couple of weeks ago, our main objective is to ensure that our employees and clients remain safe. We continue in the middle of weathering the storm, and we continue to envision difficult days ahead. Unfortunately, the number of people infected in Peru continues to rise, and the country continues under an emergency state with mandatory confinement, so far lasting over 55 days, and it has recently been extended for two more weeks as of now. The government plans are to recover the economy in four phases, with phase one starting only 2 days ago. The expectation for GDP contraction this year continues to change, with ranges of -5% to -20% being discussed by economic analysts. It is worth to note that this crisis finds the banking system, and IFS in particular, with good solvency levels and well-capitalized. In addition, the government actions to face the crisis have been within the most aggressive in the region, building upon the solid macroeconomic fundamentals that Peru has enjoyed during the last close to 30 years. We are certain that IFS has an important role to play in helping Peruvians through this situation, and more importantly, in recovering once the crisis ends. We know that it's going to take some time for the country and the economy to recover. IFS and our platform is ready to take a leading role in the recovery process, and also to adapt our strategy and capabilities to become even more relevant in the life of Peruvians under the new normal that will arise as a result of the COVID phenomenon that has impacted everybody's life. We remain committed to execute our long-term strategy, where digital and analytics play a key role, and to continue providing high-quality financial services to our customers to contribute to the country's sustainable growth by empowering all Peruvians to achieve financial well-being. Now, let me pass it on to Michela Casaza for a deeper review of our results.
Thank you, Luis Felipe. Good morning, everybody, and welcome again to Intercorp Financial Services first quarter 2020 earnings call. Again, I want to thank you all for sharing with us this call and hope you and your loved ones are safe from wherever country you are listening to this call from. This time, we have divided our presentation in four parts, which include highlights, an update to the COVID situation, the first quarter results in detail, and some few takeaways at the end. Main highlights are, at Intercorp Financial Services, profits reached $145 million in the first quarter, and ROE reached 6.6%, affected by higher provisions at Interbank and impact on investments at Interseguro and Inteligo. At Interbank, net profit decreased 17.1% year-on-year, mainly due to higher provisions, and ROE was 13.8%. The initial impacts of COVID-19 are already reflected in the first quarter 2020 key banking indicators. Continued growth in retail deposits and market share up to 13.7% after lockdown. There has been a deceleration of loan growth and activity after the lockdown, especially in retail, which now grows 12.3% year-over-year. We've registered the first impact on provisions with NPL coverage up to 136%, and the Core Equity Tier 1 ratio has improved 180 basis points year-over-year to 12%, enhanced by higher capitalization. At Interseguro, quarterly results affected by negative impacts on investment portfolio. Net premiums grew 10.8% in the quarter and 1% in the year, mainly driven by retail insurance business. We continue to be the market leader in annuities with a 27.9% market share, and the return on the investment of the portfolio is at 4.2% or 6.1% excluding the one-off, compared to a 5.8% in the previous quarter. At Inteligo, quarterly results were also affected by negative impacts on the investment portfolio. Fee income divided by the average asset under management remained stable at 1%, and the asset under management decreased quarter on quarter due to the mark-to-market despite growth in net new money. Now, let me give you an update on COVID-19 main actions on slide 5 to 10. Today, we are completing 2 full months of lockdown, which is set to finish by May 24th. Since March 15, only supermarkets, markets, pharmacies, and financial services institutions are being allowed to operate. And as Felipe mentioned, it has only been 2 days since some few other activities have started to operate. As discussed during the COVID-19 update we had on April 15, there are 4 key messages that we would like you to keep in mind. First, we had an early and fast response to this unprecedented situation. This response has successfully guaranteed the continuity of our operations. Second, most of the actions we have taken during the past weeks have been focused on helping our people and our customers to overcome the problems that UPA has been facing under the current circumstances. Third, we have reinforced our liquidity and capital positions in all of our businesses in order to face the uncertain months to come. We believe our key solvency and liquidity indicators are at sound level to face the months to come. Finally, we see an opportunity to further accelerate digital adoption by our customers under the new normal, a situation supported by the investments that we have deployed during the last years to build our digital platform. On slide 6, we are showing a summary of the Comprehensive Government Support Program, which is considered one of the most aggressive in Latin America and in the world in terms of its relative size when compared to the country's crowds. This government support has been increased further these last days as a result of the extension of the lockdown. In the first weeks of the lockdown, the government announced a support program which at that time represented around 12% of the Peruvian GDP. It was a three-phase economic stimulus plan led by both the Ministry of Economy and the Central Bank that sought to offset the COVID-19 outbreak. It included emergency measures for the health system and measures aiming at helping low-income families and companies. The biggest part of the program was Reactiva Peru, with initially 30 billion soles aiming at helping companies to fund their working capital needs to overcome the disruption in their activities. This program has been expanded to 60 billion soles this last Saturday in order to further help companies given the extension of the lockdown period. We will discuss more of this program further ahead in the presentation. With this extension, the overall government support program represents already 15% of the Peruvian GDP. We continue to work very closely with the Ministry of Finance, the Central Bank, the Superintendency, and a bank in order to manage the crisis and coordinate all measures needed. And we are also helping the government as a channel to distribute to individuals and companies the above-mentioned financial aid. On pages 7 and 8, we are showing a brief summary of the main measures taken since the beginning of the crisis. Since early March, we started taking actions to face what we believe was going to be a severe crisis, even before the government declared the state of emergency on March 15. Based on our business continuity program, we established a crisis committee with daily meetings to closely monitor 8 fronts involving key stakeholders. First, our people. 2, our operations, including key suppliers. 3, our distribution channels, physical and digital. 4, our communication strategy, internal and external. 5, review of our retail and commercial clients and portfolio. 6, design of specific credit facilities for them. 7, assessment and reinforcement of liquidity and solvency positions. And 8, measures for cost containment. All of these efforts were always taken under close coordination with our board of directors and with the relevant board committees. At Interbank, one of the key focuses is our people. Some of the action phases include the development of protocols and health surveillance, development of an active communication plan, and actions for employee engagement. We were able to quickly implement home office for most of our staff people, as we have recently made the relevant IT investments for this to happen. So today, we are able to operate with 98% of administrative staff and 50% of our call center employees working from home. Additionally, we have reduced branch hours following government parameters, and as such, reduced by 50% the employees per branch on any given day, thus allowing social distance and employee rotation to minimize the risk of contagion of big groups, and similar actions have been taken in our call centers. Regarding our operations, the IT measures taken were related to guaranteeing critical IT employees the tools and capabilities required, the focus on tools and processes to ensure home office for all areas, and freezing the deployment of new projects that could generate system instability. In the specific operations front, we have established new protocols for business continuity under the current circumstances. We have put together a new contingency plan for our call center, and we have reinforced our operational capacity to process the volume of loans rescheduling and Reactiva Peru required by our customers under our credit facilities program. Regarding our critical suppliers, we have been monitoring their contingency plans, having online and daily status with their executive teams, and monitoring and reinforcing cash supply to our branches and ATMs, given that we are actively involved in helping the government in deploying money to the vulnerable population. Finally, we all know that new cybersecurity threats have risen. To deal with them, we have been very active in reinforcing our cyber capabilities on our IT networks, including the monitoring of our key infrastructure with relevant alerts by our CyberSoft support. We have also been very active in messaging customers and employees with alerts on these new threats, and we will be applying and deploying security protocols for employees working from home. Our distribution channels are taking a very important role this day. not only because the financial system continues to operate as it has been considered as an essential industry for the country, but also because, as mentioned, we are supporting the government in the distribution of the different aid packages to the vulnerable population. Regarding our financial source, the opening hours changed many times. We currently have around 225 financial stores operating out of 255. 87% of our branch people are working on a rotating scheme, and 30% are on vacation or medical leave. And we have reduced customer capacity per branch by 50% following social distancing protocols. Our contact sector operating hours have also changed. We have increased operators from 180 to 290 to manage service requests without increasing total headcount, as we have reconverted sales people to perform this new role. We are providing private transportation to our employees also to ensure we are properly staffed in our call centers given the existing transportation restrictions in the country. Finally, our digital channels through our app and home banking allow us to continue interacting with our customers in a digital, easy and friendly way. We have designed special protocols for troubleshooting. We have created special landings deploying MINFON, loan reprogramming teams, Reactiva Peru program, and have developed digital apps and in-app communications to make sure we are close to our customers. Moreover, through Tunki, we are providing clients 100% digital solutions to be able to receive government financial aid 100% digitally, which we will discuss in a moment. Now, let's talk about the liquidity and solvency positions, which are strong and have been reinforced since the COVID-19 started. In terms of liquidity, we have taken several measures to maintain solid liquidity ratios. After the lockdown, we have obtained extra soles and dollars liquidity, such as new soles funding from central banks and new dollar funding from international banks. Our loan-to-deposit ratio at 103.4% as of the end of March is below the 104.6% of the financial system as a whole, and our liquidity coverage ratio and net stable funding ratios remain at healthy levels. We have continued to increase our retail deposits base and have gained 20 basis points market share in the quarter. With respect to our solvency position, we have also taken important measures to strengthen our capital, such as, first, increasing the capitalization of 2019 earnings to 75% from previously approved 55% to strengthen core equity tier 1 ratio and total capital ratio, and have also fully capitalized the first quarter earnings. Historically, our capitalization ratio for the many past years has been 55%. With this, our total capital ratio as of the end of March was 16.1% compared to 14.2% of the system and 11.4% required by the superintendent. And our core equity tier 1 ratio was 12%. Both of these ratios will slightly decrease in April due to the redemption of the 200 million hybrid tier 1 bond by the end of April. Moreover, we have run different stress scenarios to test solvency and are daily monitoring the balance sheet to optimize liquidity, capital, and profitability. On slide 8, Interseguro and Inteligo also had a fast and efficient reaction to COVID-19. On one side, Interseguro also implemented home office for all of its administrative staff, reduced portfolio risk profile by reducing equity positions, decreased our short dollar position, and increased our cash position. We are closely monitoring the live streaming collection and rescheduling of payments to life insurance policyholders, getting ready to recapture backlog of annuity market premiums once lockdown is over. In terms of potential increase in claims, in the first quarter, we are setting up additional reserves for an unemployment credit insurance policies, which cover up to 6 months of credit payments given to Interbank and Financiera O clients who become unemployed. There is no exposure to health insurance, and we have a natural hedge between life insurance business and the annuity business. Interseguro continues to hold a solid surplus of required capital and low debt ratio. On the other side, Inteligo also established an emergency committee early March and implemented home office for the staff of Inteligo Bank and Interfonders. Moreover, the communication with clients is frequent and all services are available: trading, transfers, withdrawals, and loan renewals. There is a higher liquidity at Intelligo when compared with pre-COVID levels and strong capital adequacy ratios. As well as for Interseguro, the biggest risk for Intelligo is the mark-to-market of the portfolio, given the current volatility. Now, let me comment on the positive impact we have experienced with the lockdown in terms of acceleration of banking beyond banks and of migration to digital. As a result of the lockdown and our efforts to boost the use of digital, we have seen an acceleration of our digital indicators as shown in slide 9. Digital users, as of March, are 69%, up from 57% 1 year ago, and have reached 78% as of the end of April. 100% digital customers, which are clients that do not use branches or contact center any longer and who use digital channels plus ATM and correspondent agents only for cash in and cash out, have reached 42%, up from 27% 1 year ago, and has reached 62% as of the end of April. Digital sales have also seen a rapid increase, but the total level of sales has decreased given the freeze in new sales in retail. Our investments to build our digital capabilities during the last year have definitely played to an advantage for our customers and our operations under the current circumstances. We've seen a huge pickup in the number of new digital accounts being opened both for individuals and small businesses in the start of the lockdown, especially in April, as the lockdown was extended. As of the end of March, 44% of new retail saving accounts were opened digitally, and the same for 70% of business accounts, compared to 24% and 38% 1 year ago, respectively. New digital client acquisition of retail customers reached 21% as of March, compared to 12% 1 year before, and has reached 51% as of the end of April. This, in line with a strong increase in the number of retail clients and businesses we have experienced in April, most of which are coming through our digital channels. We have opened 4 times more new digital retail saving accounts and business accounts during April versus March. The second big impact in April, in slide 10, is that CLIN, the P2P payment feature among multiple banks with cell phone numbers, is already active in roughly 800,000 clients only in 3 months, 40% of which use Interbank as key account. As that means that we have opened 15,000 new accounts in 1 week in Tunki, our 100% digital solution for payments in order to deliver the government financial aid for families and have allowed them to collect their money 100% digitally, avoiding them having to go to bank branches. We believe this peak in new accounts is mainly due to 2 factors. On one side, the extension of the lockdown is pushing an acceleration of digital, and on the other side, the need to have an account to be able to receive the government's aid packages faster, both for individuals and small businesses, as well as to receive the pension fund deposits. On slides 12 and 13, now let's have a closer look at the quarterly performance. IFS registered earnings of $145 million in the first quarter and $286 million when excluding the negative impact on investments at Interseguro and Intelligo. This led to a quarterly ROE of 6.6% for IFS. All 3 operating segments had different impacts from COVID-19. Interbank registered earnings of $221 million and 13.8% ROE in this first quarter, mainly due to the increasing cost of risk, which reached 3.4% in the quarter, as well as to the top line, which was affected by lower activity, especially in retail. Both Interseguro and Intelligo registered losses in the quarter of $22 and $55 million, respectively, negatively impacted by market trends on their investment portfolio. Excluding the 56 and 84 million negative impact on investment, Interseguro and Intelligo would have registered profits of $34 and $29 million in the quarter, respectively. Total revenues were hit in the quarter mainly by other income from Interseguro and Inteligo, which decreased 10% on a quarterly basis, but grew 0.7% on a yearly basis. At Interbank, total revenues continued to increase, 1% in the quarter and 5% in the year. Net interest and similar income was up 0.9% in the quarter and 10.3% when compared to the same quarter last year. The efficiency ratio of IFS was also hit by other income, increasing 310 basis points in the quarter, but is still a very low ratio at 36.4% in the quarter. At Interbank, efficiency ratio was 38.8% in the quarter, as costs remained relatively stable on the quarter and improved from 40.3% versus last year. The first measures of cost containment were started to be implemented by the end of March, but we expect to see bigger impacts in the next quarter as we will have the full 3-month impact on the measures we are adopting. NIM at Interbank decreased 20 basis points in the quarter, but increased 10 basis points in the year. Reported risk-adjusted NIM show a strong decrease to 3.2% due to the increase in cost of risk previously mentioned. Fees from financial services decreased 13.4% in the quarter and 1.6% in the year, mainly due to credit card-related fees due to a sharp decrease in transactional volume of the last 2 weeks of March. At the insurance segment, gross premiums plus collection increased 8.9% in the quarter, but decreased 8.4% in the year. Return on investment decreased 160 basis points in the quarter and in the year, mainly due to the negative impacts previously mentioned. And at our wealth management segment, asset under management decreased 5.1% on a quarterly basis and 2.2% in the year, and fees were down 8.5% in the quarter, but increased 10.5% in the year. The quarterly trends are mainly explained by the negative impact on the investment portfolio. On slide 14, IFS relevant net income, the base for dividend payments, reached 213 million soles and is 68 million soles higher than the IFRS profits, mainly due to a difference at Interseguro, which has registered profits of 40 million soles in local GAAP versus a 22 million loss under IFRS for the different accounting treatments on the investment portfolio. Now, let's have a look at each segment's performance in detail. Starting with the banking segment on slide 16, we are showing that COVID-19 is already impacting most of the key banking indicators. As mentioned before, NIM, risk-adjusted NIM, has been a decline, and total other income decreased 8.2% in the quarter and 8.1% in the year, mainly impacted by a reduction in fee income due to the strong decrease of transactional volume. On slide 17, retail deposits speed up their growth during this quarter at 5.2%, reaching a yearly growth of 15%, allowing us to gain 20 basis points market share in the quarter and 50 basis points market share in the last 12 months, reaching a record 13.7%. Total deposits decreased 1.4% in the quarter, as we have replaced corporate and institutional deposits with more cost-efficient funding from the central bank. Due to banks, which includes this funding as well as funding from international banks, has increased more than 30% during this quarter as we obtain both extra liquidity from the central bank in soles as well as dollar liquidity from certain international banks to increase our liquidity levels given the uncertainty at that time. Average cost of funds has already improved 10 basis points in the quarter and 30 basis points in the year, down to 2.7%. And we expect further improvements in cost of funds coming both from the redemption of the $200 million Tier 1 bond in late April and from lower rates on deposits and due to banks. Loan-to-deposit ratio at 103.4% is below the system average of 104.6%. This ratio will see a deterioration in the coming months for Interbank and for the system as a whole from the participation on Reactiva Peru loans, which have a special funding from central banks. So we will be showing you this ratio also excluding those loans for comparability purposes. On slide 18, our yearly loan growth has decelerated after the lockdown, down to 10% year over year, with retail loans growing 12.3% and commercial loans growing 7.4%. We continue to grow faster than the market in retail, but we were very cautious on commercial banking, especially on big tickets with corporates at the end of March when the COVID outbreak started, so we proactively managed the balance sheet, giving priority to liquidity at that time rather than growing loans. This has led to a decrease in our total loan market share of 30 basis points in the quarter, with a stable market share in retail and a decrease in commercial banking. On slide 19, let me give you some characteristics of the Reactiva Peru program launched by the government. The original amount of this program was 30 billion soles, targeting around 350,000 companies. There are four different levels of coverage provided by the government, which go from 80% for the bigger corporates to 98% for the smaller SMEs. Loans have a 12-month grace period, and total maturity is up to 36 months. There are limits to the amount of each loan, which relates to 1 month of sales, and is up to 10 million soles. There are no capital or provisioning requirements for the guaranteed portion of these loans. This weekend, the government has announced the extension of the program to 60 million soles with specific skills to be defined. As of May 11th, there were 11 repo options that have already taken place for a total amount of 27 billion soles, or 91% of the originally launched program, which now will be extended. Interbank has been able to obtain 3.1 billion soles, or 12% of the funds, which is slightly above its market share in commercial banking of around 9%. Most of the funds are related to corporate and mid-sized companies, with 1.7 billion in the 80% guarantee bucket and 1.1 billion in the 90% guarantee bucket. We have already disbursed as of today, and we most likely disburse all the 3.1 billion throughout the rest of this week. On slide 20, we wanted to give you an update of the loans we scheduled so far, which have reached 30% of the total loan portfolio of the bank as of the end of April, slightly below the 33% of the system as a whole. This represents 10.9 billion soles for Interbank and 116 billion soles for the total system. This percentage was 12% for Interbank as of the end of March. As for our retail portfolio is concerned, loans rescheduled reached 35% of the retail portfolio, or 6.9 billion soles, which correspond to loans granted to roughly speaking 300,000 clients. In commercial banking, 24% of the commercial portfolio has been rescheduled, or 4 billion soles, which corresponds to 15% more businesses in terms of market, but more skewed towards corporate and mid-sized companies in terms of volumes. On slide 21, we wanted to give you a sense of the main portfolios exposed to COVID-19 impact. 11% of the portfolio is comprised of loans to small businesses, consumer loans to self-employed workforce, which include credit cards and personal loans, and mortgages to self-employed workforce, which we consider to be the most exposed, but which at the same time has higher coverage ratios than consumer loan NPL coverage ratios above 200%. On the other hand, the least exposed portfolio represents 55% of the total loan book and includes corporate and mid-sized companies, and consumer loans to the public sector employees, which are more resilient to crisis or less exposed to unemployment. Within our commercial loan portfolio, only around 3% of the commercial portfolio of Interbank is related to affected sectors such as oil and gas, tourism, transport, or entertainment. On slides 22 and 23, starting with 22, we are showing the evolution of the stock of provisions over total exposure or expected loss. This trend shows that the risk profile of the bank has already seen a further deterioration in this quarter as a result of COVID, with expected loss up 20 basis points in the quarter at total bank level and also both in retail and commercial. This is much stronger in credit cards, which has seen an increase of 50 basis points in the quarter. Having said that, we believe this does not show yet the full extent of the impact, as migration between stages has not been fully recorded this quarter due to the rescheduling schemes in place. A large part of the impact registered on the first quarter is coming from the update on the forward-looking model, which as of March included a GDP forecast of -5%, in which as today has been revised many times with different numbers forecasted in a range from -5% to -20% approximately. On slide 23, cost of risk was up 60 basis points in the quarter and 110 basis points in the year, reaching 3.4%, in line with what previously explained, with cost of risk in retail banking reaching 5.5% and up 70 basis points in the quarter and 130 basis points in the year, and commercial banking cost of risk reaching 0.9% and up 50 basis points in the quarter and 90 basis points in the year. The NPL coverage ratio for the bank was 136.1% as of the end of March, up from 131% 1 year ago, with retail coverage ratio at 160%, up from 148% 1 year ago, and commercial banking coverage ratio at 81.6%. Down from 93% 1 year ago, when we had a spike in this ratio due to the construction sector companies. On slide 24, we are showing you the breakdown of the year-over-year increase in expenses as of the first quarter. As you can see from the breakdown, what drives the yearly growth to be 6.4% are first, technology expenses, which grew 16% year-over-year as a result of higher IT investments due to the transformation process, and second, variable costs related to the strong growth in credit cards of 13% year-over-year. All other expenses grew at a rate of 3 to 4%. Right after the outbreak of COVID-19 and as soon as we entered the lockdown, we started working on identifying opportunities for cost saving in the short term. Some variable costs will decrease just because of lower transactional volume, as is the case of credit card related expenses and variable employee benefits. On the other hand, we are taking many measures to decrease fixed costs, including hiring and salary increase freezes, renegotiation of all contracts, including rentals, IT contracts, and all relevant suppliers, reduction of discretionary expenses such as advertising, and during the month of April, we have already registered a decrease in cost of around 10% versus April 2019. On slide 25, we wanted to share with you and reinforce the actions taken on capital, which include the increase of the 2019 earnings from 55 to 75% and the full capitalization of the first quarter earnings. With this, our capital ratio as of March is 16.1% and is the core equity tier 1 ratio is 12%. As of the end of April, we have called the $200 million tier 1 bond for optional redemption and, as we announced in the previous recall, after this and the distribution of dividends, our total capital ratio stands at 14.9% as of the end of April, and core equity tier 1 ratio stands at 11.4%, levels similar to February and well above the minimum requirement. Please now turn the following pages to discuss our insurance segment results. On slide 27, gross premiums increased 8.9% on a quarterly basis, with growth in almost all business segments, with Interseguro remaining as the market leader in annuity with 27.9% market share. During the first quarter, gross premiums increased 8.9% on a quarterly basis, but decreased 8.4% on a yearly basis. The growth in retail insurance was double-digit for the quarter and the year. Likewise, regulated and private annuities increased in the quarter, but remained below year-over-year, mainly explained by a market contraction. On slide 28, in the first quarter, Interseguro investment portfolio reached $11.8 billion, which represents a decrease of 5.4% in the quarter and relatively flat year over year. Results from investments in the first quarter were $177 million, which represents a 4% return on Interseguro's investment portfolio, down 160 basis points on a quarterly and yearly basis. On slide 30, we can see Interseguro's main indicators. Net interest and similar income was $25 million, a 3.4% increase compared with the fourth quarter, mainly explained by interest income generated by a higher average balance of fixed income investments, in addition to a reduction in interest expense related to lower funding costs on both client deposits and external lines of credit. Net interest and similar income decreased $5 million or 17% year over year, mainly attributed to lower average returns on financial investments and higher costs of client deposits. Net income from financial services was $43 million, a decrease of 8% when compared to the previous quarter, mainly explained by a base effect due to the above average returns during the fourth quarter, as well as increased recurring income due to higher mark-to-market on asset under management in such quarter. On a yearly basis, net income from financial services increased 10%, mainly explained by higher brokerage fees due to increased trading volumes, triggered by higher price volatility and client appetite for investing or rebalancing portfolios. Inteligo's other income reached a loss of $85.8 million, a decrease of $100 million on a quarterly basis and $122 million on a yearly basis, attributable to mark-to-market valuations and realized losses on Inteligo's proprietary portfolio during the second half of the quarter, mainly as a result of the COVID-19 outbreak. Revenues generated by Inteligo for the quarter were minus $17 million. On slide 31, Inteligo's asset under management reached $18 billion, a 1.6% decrease on a quarterly basis, but a 1.3% growth on a yearly basis. The quarterly reduction was mostly related to the negative mark-to-market valuation as a result of the COVID outbreak, new money for the period. Conversely, the annual increase was mainly explained by new account openings. We generated an influx of funds after strengthened prospection and client conversion strategies at Inteligo. Finally, let's have a look at the potential trends coming forward and some key takeaways of this earnings call. On slide 33, we are not providing guidance at this time, given the high level of uncertainty of the months to come. Instead, we wanted to share with you some trends that, given the information that we currently have and the assumptions that we are able to make today, could materialize in the coming months. We believe we will be able to maintain solid levels of capital, given the increased capitalization and lower growth, and adequate levels of liquidity due to the central bank measures and flight to quality in deposits. We expect lower growth in loan volumes due to the slowdown of the economy and to the tightening of our credit standards, this excluding the Reactiva Peru program. We also expect lower revenues, lower net interest income in NIM due to lower growth and activity in addition to the loan rescheduling impact. Cost of funds will likely decrease further as a result of lower rates and the already in place redemption of the Tier 1 bonds executed. We expect higher provisions and cost of risk due to the deterioration of the portfolio, and we will most likely register lower costs thanks to the cost containment measures being deployed and the lower activity. And as a result of all the previously above mentioned trends, we expect lower profits and ROE, but mainly coming from higher provisions and the impact on investments already registered. On slide 34, I want to close the presentation with a brief summary of five key messages. First, the quarterly earnings and ROE are affected by higher provisions at Interbank and negative impact from investments at Interseguro and Intelgo. Second, we had an early and fast response to this unprecedented situation, and this response has successfully guaranteed the continuity of our operations. Third, most of the actions we have taken during the past weeks have been focused on helping our people and our customers to overcome the problems that they have been facing under the current circumstances. Fourth, we have reinforced our liquidity and capital position in all of our businesses in order to face the uncertain months to come. We believe our key solvency and liquidity indicators are at sound levels to face the months to come. Finally, we see an opportunity to further accelerate digital adoption by our customers under the new normal, a situation supported by the investment that we have deployed during the last 2 years to build our digital platform. Thank you very much. Now we welcome any questions you might have.
Thank you. At this time, we will open the floor for your questions. First, we will take the questions from the conference call and then the webcast questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touchtone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, just press the pound key. Again, to ask a question, please press the star and one now. For the webcast viewers, simply click the question mark button on your webcast player. A pop-up window will appear, and then simply type your question in the box and click send. We will pause momentarily to compile a list of questioners. And your first question comes from the line of Ernesto Gabilondo from Bank of America. Your line is live. Please proceed with your questions.
Hi, good morning, Luis Felipe, Michela, and good morning to the rest of the management team. Thanks for the opportunity. My first question is on the economic outlook. You have mentioned GDP growth expectations are between -5% to -13%. But what would be the average level of GDP that you will be considering for your budget or your assumptions? And how should we think about the economic growth next year? And then my second question is on provision charges and cost of risk. Can you share with us how much of your provision charges in the quarter were related to COVID-19? And when do you expect to have the peak in provisions? And then my last question is on the Reactiva program. My understanding is if the client has already a credit with you, then you can also provide a Reactiva program, right? So how much do you estimate that the Reactiva program could add to your total loan portfolio? And can you explain us how was the selection to assign the Reactiva programs per bank? And have you estimated what could be the impact to your total non-interest rate by the incorporation of the Reactiva programs? Thank you.
Okay, Ernesto, it's Luis Felipe. Thank you very much for your question. Let me go on the GDP growth, which is, as we mentioned, it's been changing. The range we're seeing started at -5%, right when the outbreak broke. However, now we see more range between -10 and -10, and this is evolving for a number of reasons. First, because the confinement continues to be extended. So every 2 weeks, we're getting a new confinement, and that obviously every week that the country, if the country is closed, GDP goes down by a factor. So it's tough to say. We are very actively talking to the central bank and talking to different think tanks and economic analysts to have a perception. But so far the range is that wide, -10 to -10, and we're kind of running our stress scenarios under those parameters to see the potential impact. So if the government decides to extend this, probably numbers will continue to move. The fact that the government is starting to open the economy is a positive news. However, it's been very shy in terms of how much the economy is being opened, and the protocols that have to be put together by companies in order to come into action are very strict. So we don't see huge impact in the short term of the economy being open. And lastly, something that nobody is being able to put down very strictly into analysis is the impact of the government programs, including Reactiva, Crecer, and FAE, which are more targeted to small companies, in the whole process, okay? Because that liquidity is starting to come to market. So the government continues, they're expecting before May to touch like 6 million people with 760 soles bonus for vulnerable population, plus the liquidity coming from the government programs of Reactiva and the other SMEs. Those should have a positive impact, but are very tough to quantify right now because the money is not flowing that quickly because of certain bureaucracy and certain toughness to reach the target people. So that's on the GDP outlook. Let me do a comment on Reactiva, and then maybe Michela can close with the provisions part of your question and also with the impact of Reactiva in our numbers. Reactiva is a program set by the Central Bank and the Ministry of Finance, whereby all the financial institutions can lend to any type of client. It could be existing clients or non-existing clients. You get the guarantees, so you look for the clients that require this funding, and the certain restrictions, the certain activities that are restricted, certain type of companies, in terms of the credit profile that are restricted, but then else it's open for everybody. So the way it works is that Central Bank has an option almost every week for the last, almost every day for the last 2 weeks, whereby they put an amount that banks or financial institutions can bid upon, depending on the level of the guarantee. So for instance, they say, okay, we have 3 billion soles for auction, for the 80% bucket. So the banks come in with their postures in terms of the maximum rate that one will charge for those funds. And whoever goes lower gets the funds. The only restriction is that you cannot lend to your customers at a higher rate than what you have bid. And that's the way it works. So you have options every day for the different buckets, and the banks start putting the postures, and then you get the funds, you turn around, you place it with your customers, and once the money is placed, you take the paperwork to the central bank and you do a repo for that loan, so you get your funding back for the part that is guaranteed by the government. Basically, that's the way it works. So you're free to participate, you're free to be as aggressive as you want, and you're free to share it with your existing customers or with granted to new customers. Obviously, given that we need to make sure that we have fiduciary duties to recruit money not only for the bank, but also for on behalf of the government. There's a credit analysis process going through it, but banks at Central Bank have built like fast-track processes in order to address certain sectors where we want to focus more, certain types of customers. Every bank has a different strategy on that front. And the rates are very low. No, the lowest rate is, I think, the funding from the central bank comes at 0.5% plus 0.5% per year for the guarantee of the government. And some of the options have come out at 0.55% rate and up to 3.5% depending on the bucket and the guarantee that you are getting from the government. So now, maybe Michela, you can help me on the provisions and the impact of Reactiva in our numbers.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe just to close on the Reactiva issue. Actually, so far, we have 3 billion soles, no, out of the first 30 billion soles of Reactiva Perú, no. So, I mean, at the very beginning when we were analyzing the impact of that on our NIM, no, we estimated something between 20 and 30 basis points. And this because Reactiva Peru loans are, I mean, really close to zero margin. No, it's funding at 0.5%, rates below 1%. So this is really a zero-sum game. But now that the Reactiva Peru program has been extended, no, we need to understand how much more of this second package we will have. But just, I mean, as a rule of thumb, if we have additional 3 billion soles, no, so a similar portion to the first one, that impact on me can reach up to 50 basis points. And
Sorry to interrupt. This is not like kind of a business. This is providing liquidity for your customers to be stronger and you can continue doing business. So we see this, as Michaela mentioned, very marginal for us in terms of contribution to profits. It's more given sustainability and viability to the customers or clients so they do not break the channel of payments.
Yeah, so actually it is very important to continue to look at the bank like two banks, no? We will continue to monitor all our ratios and key indicators, excluding Reactiva Peru guaranteed portion, no? Because it's like big amount, but close to zero profitability. And related to cost of risk, what we have seen in this first quarter, more than 50% of the provisions that we are doing are coming from COVID. And why? Because we updated the forward-looking variables. So basically, we were coming from a scenario which was a positive scenario, no, with growth in GDP of around 3%, growth of internal demand of around 3 to 4%. So the scenario that we had prior to this change were very positive. So basically, by changing this forward-looking scenario to a minus 5 GDP growth, which is the one we had at the time that we closed the numbers, no, the portfolios which are more, related to this, which are for sure credit cards and small businesses, were the ones that have shown in the expected loss number register higher increases in provisions. Now, having said so, this is just a partial number of what is still to come. First, because the forward-looking variables have worsened from the time that we closed our numbers. And second, because we still need to see the behavior of the portfolio in terms of migration between stages. No, and to understand what portion of the loans that have been rescheduled will actually become bad credit, no, because of course it would not be all of it. But that effect, the migration between stages, is not yet there in the numbers of the first quarter. So we do expect more provisions in the second quarter, and have in mind that the second quarter has 2 full months of lockdown, no, April and May. So we will have also some impact in terms of revenue.
Very helpful, Ms. Felipe and Micaela. Thank you very much. Just a follow-up in terms of Reactiva. Have you estimated what could be the impact in terms of provisions? Because I believe there will be a 12-month grace period. So I just want to understand how this will work because, as you mentioned, there will be a portion of guarantee, so the impact will be very small. But just to understand on the timeline how it will evolve.
Ernesto, yes. Thanks for the question. The impact on provision is very limited because there are no provisions on the guaranteed portion, no? And in the client where the guarantee is only 80%, there we're talking about corporate, so basically it is not such a high provision. So it's not something that material that what we will see in terms of those provisions.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
And your next question comes from the line of Mason Mullen from Scotiabank. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. My first question is on capital. In particular, we saw other comprehensive income take a hit this quarter. I think it was about 500 million soles in our calculation. Can you talk, and you mentioned the 12% CET1, and then if you can repeat what you said about where capital would be in April, and then talk about where would be the minimum level? We know the regulatory minimum, but what is the minimum that IFS would feel comfortable with in terms of CET1? And then my second question is just a follow-up on provisioning, just to make sure I understood clearly. So you mentioned that, of course, the macro indicators are weaker from when you close these numbers already. You mentioned that there's going to be more provisions coming. So really, these forward-looking provisions were forward-looking at that time. So we're going to see more forward-looking provisions in the second quarter, not just reflecting the actual delinquency in the second quarter, but some gauge of what kind of losses you would expect on those loans that were restructured. Is that correct? Thank you.
Good
morning,
Jason. I'm going to pass it to Michaela. I think she's ready for this. Go ahead, Michaela.
Good morning, Jason. Thank you for your question. Maybe let's start with the cost of risk. One, I guess what you described is the answer is yes. We expect a further update of the macro variables in the second quarter, no? As we have mentioned that the different variables have changed since what we used, no? By the end of these numbers. So this will be a first impact. And the second, the answer is also yes, no? We will see some movements between stages that will materialize. I'm not sure whether it is going to be all of it, because have in mind that the rescheduling programs that we have in place are longer than that. But we will start to see the effect of the first groups of clients that will not be able to pay their debts. No? So there will be more migration between stages than what we have registered in the first quarter of this year. And in terms of capital, the ratios as of the end of April are 14.9% for total capital ratio and 11.4% for core equity tier one ratio. And besides the, as you mentioned, the minimum regulatory that in Peru we only have for total capital ratio, in which as of April is 11.2%, what the superintendency requires, we have an internal limit, which is 200 basis points above the minimum regulatory requirement. So that regulatory requirement actually has been changing and decreasing. So as of April, that number is 11.2. Our internal limit should be 13.2, and we are at 14.9%. That's for total capital ratio. And as of the core equity tier one ratio is concerned, as of April, 11.4, we have an internal limit of 10%. So even here, we are well above our internal limit. We do not have a limit for core equity tier one ratio from the superintendency, but of course, we aligned our internal limit to also what all the rating agencies are seeing, and with this level, we feel comfortable at the time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Your next question comes from the line of Piedad Alessandri with Credit Corp Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you very much for allowing questions. I wanted to ask regarding the investment portfolio of Inteligo and Interseguro, if you have made some changes regarding the variability and the risk exposure of those portfolios, given the current market circumstances, preparing yourself for the following quarters. If you could give us a bit more details of your measures regarding the investment portfolio in Interseguro and Inteligo.
Sure. Well, thanks very much for your question. Let me pass it on to each of the responsible of both Inteligo and Interseguro for a brief comment on each of their strategies. So why don't we start first with Gonzalo Basadre from Interseguro, and then we will pass it on to Bruno so he can touch upon it as well. Gonzalo?
Yeah, sure. Hi. We've done a couple of things to reduce the risk of our portfolio. First of all, we reduced the equity allocation to our portfolio. We were selling some of our positions in some of the names. The other thing we did is we've closed some of our short position in US dollars, and to make us less our exposure less a smaller exposure to variability of the exchange rate. We've also been reviewing all the names in our portfolio to check what's the impact on of the new scenario, and we are doing some changes in the positions. The superintendency, by the way, has made it more flexible for us to do some of our sales, so that will facilitate the change of the positions in the portfolio.
Bruno, so yeah, can you?
Yes, in our case, we did reduce some of the exposure to investments that we had during March, and that's why we realized some losses during the month of March that have been that are shown in the results. Mainly some fixed income and equity exposure that we had. Going forward, our portfolio is still very much geared towards fixed income investments, so we think we should be okay going forward, but still market volatility is still due to be high, we think, and so you know, the only way to limit that would be to unwind the entire portfolio, and that's certainly not possible, but we think we have taken the appropriate steps.
Okay, you could say that Interseguro's portfolio had a high exposure to FX, so that affected the result?
We are, I mean, in terms of the size of the portfolio, it's not that deep. It's our short dollar position, it's around less than 2% of our overall size, but still has an impact on our results. Still, what we did was we reduced our short position on the performance.
Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Yuri Fernandez with JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Ms. Felipe, Michaela, and team. I have two questions also. I would like to start by margins. My point is how much the loan reschedule could impact your margins. I guess you are giving zero rate loans to some credit cards and other personal loans for the installments in April and May. So my question is how that could impact your margins. Should we see this impacting the second Q? It will be a hit on margins, or should we see, you know, this negative trend being reflected in another account? I don't know, like an impairment account or something like this. I guess where I want to reach is the global impact for the margins, right? Because you have several headwinds. You have the lower rates in Peru. You have Reactiva, the 20, 30 bps Michaela mentioned. And you also have the renegotiated loans. So my I guess where I wanna reach is like how bad could be NII, you know, this year? Can we be missing, you know, like a very negative trend on NII here? And my second question is regarding costs. You mentioned some measures to reduce costs, and you are starting to do this in March. So my point is, how much cost can you cut? Like, could you see administrative expenses converging close to inflation? Is that possible? Like, what's the guideline for cost here? Thank you.
Thanks very much. Let me give you first an overview of how I feel, and then we can go to Michaela for details. It's margins are obviously going to be under pressure. The extent of the reduction in income, I don't think it will overcome the reduction in financial costs. It is tough really to fully get a sense now because we're still going through the process. The way it works is we have granted, we will have two impacts straight from
the reprogramming coming from the programs that we have launched. First, we did some reprogramming at the beginning of, late March, where we did the reprogramming with interest being charged, okay? But then in April, we switched to a program where there was zero interest, but only for the installments during April and May. So it's not the whole loan that changes, it's only the installments. Similarly, for the minimum payment of the credit card, what we call the minimum payment. So that, at the end, based on the numbers that we have now, is between granting 400 to 500 million soles at a zero rate. No, everything else will come with interest. So that will impact, firstly, the result. Second, we need to see the actual behavior of our customers once the programs end. And that usually we have some parameters. I don't want to go very profound on this. Hopefully we have some calculations on what we would expect. However, this phenomenon is really first in class, you know, because it's been very broad throughout the economy. Now, we've made it very easy for the customers to access to these programs. And given the nature of the crisis, many people, some just to be conservative, decided to go into the program, and many others probably will have lots of difficulty. But that, at this stage, is very tough for us to measure. A counterpart for this will be, again, all the liquidity problems that are coming into the system. Okay? So doing the numbers is not that easy. What we know is that when this starts opening up and the customers start transitioning through the payment process, margins will be affected by the people that cannot pay, no, because we will have to do an assessment of any interest that were related to those guys that will have to come back. And there's also the impairment part of the loans granted at zero rates, and this is being discussed with accountants and the IFRS provisions. Michele can give us a little bit more of light, but there's a discussion on the one-time hit that you will have to take because of those zero interest rates and the rate versus you do the NPV for that hit. No? Is it at the rate of your average loan? Is it at a different rate? And that's all being discussed right now. It's very new. It has impacted most of the banks around the world. So that's something we're working around and probably we'll have more clarity when we have the next call. And then in terms of costs, I think you mentioned inflation. We will be much more aggressive than that. We see our cost base flat to lower than that, but maybe Michele can give us more of detail in these two subjects.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Felipe. Judy, just to complement on the portion of margins and how it should be recorded under IFRS, actually, as Ms. Felipe mentioned, no, IFRS 9 requires you to do a calculation of NPV, no, of the loans that have been reprogrammed with different conditions than the original, which is the case, no, for a portion of the loans that we have rescheduled with zero interest rate. And you should compare the NPV of the new loans with the original rate for those loans. So basically, there, the discussion is on which rate to use to do this exercise. Because as you can imagine, now for portfolios, as it can be credit cards or small businesses which have higher rates, this impact can be big, and the issue is that you have to register it all in one shot. So it goes like all the portfolio that you have rescheduled has to be recorded in the second quarter as an impairment of that value that goes directly to revenues. No? So it's a negative on the net interest margin. So we do not know the extent yet of that number because we are in many discussions, and because actually, as for many things, and there is, as was the case for provisions, no, that at the end of the day, the international auditing community decided that the models couldn't be applied just as they were, and that a financial expert criteria should be used for provisions for COVID. These same discussions are happening now for this impact on revenues. So we still need to figure out what would be that number for the second quarter. And in terms of cost, just to complement what Vicente mentioned, there are some variable costs that we have that actually already as of April we have seen the impact, no? Because our cost base was growing mainly because of IT expenditure, and that will continue maybe with a little bit of less growth, but we will not stop the business transformation. But the variable costs related to growth, especially for the credit card portfolio, that has stopped. No? So basically everything related to rewards, to incentives, et cetera, to the credit card portfolio, as of April, has been much less than in the past. And also everything related to variable cost of incentives to employees, as obviously the earnings are not as before. So what we have already seen in April, which is the result of both factors, lower variable cost and the measures we are implementing, is that the month of April at the bank level has seen a decrease of 10% versus the month of April of 2019. And what we are targeting is, as Vicente mentioned, to have a flat cost versus last year, not more than that. And we continue to work to find some other cost containment measures that we can put in place. But remember that we already had in plan before COVID a reduction of branches, no? So we are continuing with that plan that sees some additional branches to be closed this year, no? On top of what we have already closed in the past 2 years, which was close to 10% of the overall branch network. And what we are also reviewing is that given the new normal and the acceleration of digital, the new overall distribution model could require less branches. No? So there are many exercises that, on top of the ones that we have already closed and are implementing, are evaluated to see what other things we can put in place.
Super clear, Michael. Just to close, we have also streamlined our IT projects. However, we have identified certain where we will double or triple down because we see that the digital traction that customers are getting will allow us to grow. So the only thing where we will continue to invest heavily will be in deploying new digital capabilities. Everything else has been kind of rationalized.
No, thank you, gentlemen. If I may, just a third one. I think Peru is doing very well. You Peruvian banks, you are very quick on disbursing the program on Reactiva. We are seeing other countries still struggling, and Peru was able to disburse almost all the money. Actually, at least do the auction in about 14 days. You are doing the zero rate renegotiations. But still, my concern is regarding regulation. Are you seeing any kind of regulatory pressure in addition to the cap, the postponement of 4 months for interest rate payments? I think we saw that, but just checking if there is something going on in Peru that we are missing here regarding regulation for banks on taxations, caps on interest, or any kind of stuff that is a concern to you at this point.
Yes, thank you. We're seeing many things these days. There's a lot of pressure in many fronts. Specifically for the financial system, there are some special coming from Congress, ideas on, well, additional taxes or limits on what companies can charge, or moratorium in terms of charging for certain services or installments through the emergency state. So obviously, that's a point of concerns for everybody. We're actively monitoring that. We hope that given that what has built Peru in the last 30 years has been with respect to the market forces and also they are disciplined in terms of macroeconomic prudence and well-regulated but competitive financial system will prevail. However, it's a concern for everybody, and we are watching that very closely.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
Question comes from the line of Daniel Mora with Credit Score Capital. Your line is live. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for the presentation. I have a question regarding the commercial segment. Unlike other banks in the region, we did not observe a spike growth in the commercial segment during the quarter. What is the best way to think about it? It could be due to a low demand from clients, or the company probably was cautious disbursing credits to this segment. Thank you so much.
Hi. Thank you very much, Daniel, for your question. Well, actually, as you well know, we are a universal bank. We're very strong in all of our business. However, we are not a big corporate bank. So I guess we can be considered not that like go-to for the big corporates as the first reaction. So basically, I think what we've seen is happening in the recap, no? The big corporate banks have the ones that have been granted the big lines in order to take precaution in light of what was coming at the end of March. What we've seen is that after the close of March, our activity has come back. We have grown. And also, as Michaela mentioned, we kind of took a conservative approach. We kind of were reading the crisis to be much bigger than what was appearing at the beginning of mid-March. So we also were not very proactive in going out to offering credit to big tickets just because we were worried about liquidity and we wanted to get a good sense on assessment of the situation before actually opening our books. And once we saw that our deposits continued to grow and that the central bank was there providing lots of liquidity and coming with the Reactiva program and all that, we kind of have felt more comfortable in also serving bigger tickets for some of our customers.
Okay, thank you so much.
Maybe just to complement, as of the month of April, we have seen an increase in the commercial loan book of close to 4%. So on April, you will see something more of those loans going to especially corporate.
The line of Andres Soto with Santander. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you for the presentation. I would like just to clarify the accounting treatment of these rescheduled loans in terms of asset quality and cost of risk. I understand that under local regulation, those rescheduled loans are considered as performing loans. And I would like to understand if that's the same way you are going to reflect that under IFRS and if you are consequently considering provisions on those rescheduled loans. Thank you.
Sure. Why don't Michaela, you have to get started.
Yeah. Good morning, Andres. Thank you for the question. You're correct. In local GAAP, those loans are considered as normal loans. But actually, what we have been doing in local GAAP, both, in April, is that despite the fact that you are not required to do provisions because the loans are outstanding and normal, we have booked voluntary provisions, okay? That's local GAAP. Now, when we talk IFRS, as we are talking about expected losses, we do have already a first impact from the forward-looking variables, okay? It's not one-to-one, no, correlated to the rescheduling of loans, but for sure it includes higher provisions because of the new macro scenario, so there is a portion is already there. And what we
are going to do and have been doing also in the first quarter is that, I mean, we are not going to be keeping our loans as normal, no? So we are going to run some estimates in terms of the migration between the different stages and constitute provisions based on the behavior and the expected loss and CDs of the different client portfolios and products. So it will not be treated as what the superintendency, if you want, is allowing us to do.
Perfect, thank you. And I understand it's the same for asset quality, you know, when you show the asset quality indicators, you are going to also reflect some of the effects of this rescheduling. Is that correct?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Perfect, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And our next question comes from Carlos Gomez with HSBC. Please go ahead, your line is open. Carlos Gomez, your line is open. If you're able to hear us, we are unable to hear you. Can you please check your mute switch or return to your telephone handset? Carlos, if you're talking to us, we are unable to hear you. At this time, we will take the webcast questions. I will now turn the call over to iAdvise.
Luis Felipe and Michaela, we have a couple of questions from the webcast. Both are related to Inteligo. The first one's coming from Luis Ordóñez from SURA. Can you please give more details about the losses on the Inteligo proprietary portfolio? What kind of certain investment strategies hit its performance? And the second is from Juan Berrios from LBS. Were those losses due to mark-to-market or valuation changes from independent evaluator? Could we know what GDP assumptions you used for IFRS 9 and provisions purposes?
Okay, thank you. I think, Michaela, why don't you help me with the last part of the provisions on the GDP for IFRS 9, and then we pass it on to Bruno for the question about the losses at Inteligo.
Okay. Actually, we mentioned it already. The GDP growth that we used for provisions as of the first quarter was -5%. That was the estimate, no, that we had at the time that we ran the numbers.
Okay, and now Bruno, maybe you can help us with the question about Inteligo's portfolio.
Yes, on the first part of the question, our portfolio is mainly fixed income, about two-thirds, I would say, with the other part divided between alternatives and equity. The mark-to-market or realized losses that we've seen were both in fixed income and equity. Unfortunately, both were down during March, with basically net flat in the alternative side of the portfolio. So both fixed income and equity saw declines during the first quarter. On the second part, as I mentioned before, we did reduce some exposure in the portfolio, and that's why we have a portion that's realized, and that realized was sold at market prices. So there's no third-party valuation. It was market operations, and the positions were sold to the market with market prices.
At this time, I'm showing no further questions. I would like to turn the call over to the operator.
And at this time, we have no further questions. I would now like to turn the program back to Mrs. Casaza for any closing remarks.
Just to thank again everybody for taking the time for this call, and we will be listening to each other again for our second quarter.
in August. Bye, everybody.
Okay, thank you.